back in the day when I was in politics, the Minister for Finance was an austere, hardline disciplinarian that took no shit from anyone in terms of line ministers. And it just seems you're a bit of a pussycat when it comes to these overspending. Robert Watt, in the time of austerity, used to lay down the law. Now he's gone missing. I mean, like, here we have no explanation. Something about electrical cables, sprinklers, VAT, preliminaries costing 10 million a month. It's just a runaway train. Are you not going to put the boot into somebody?
Well, look, in relation to the two points that you've most raised on my attitude towards public expenditure on pay, we're on the verge of a massive disruption for patients tomorrow because I'm looking to manage the public's money in a way that is careful and responsible. So that's at the heart of my attitude towards public money and public pay. And in relation to the question that you've raised on the hospital with me, I have grave concerns about the latter part of the how the information about the procurement process and the costs around that were shared to government. Across the coming days and weeks, I will be acting upon that. But
you're not making anyone accountable. No one's been fired. No one's been said, you should, it was your job as project officer, as board member to deal with this. This is why they were appointed to the board, was to be a gatekeeper to cost.
And this is not yet finished.
Here's a woman who has already had her case settled, received a significant award, but she is dealing with worsening health, the reality of a terminal illness, and hoping that these new clinical drugs will help her. I think there is no other candidate for Person of the Year for 2018 than herself. And I got on to our programme, got on to the people in rehab who do the awards in conjunction with RTE and the adjudication panels. The nominations are actually sort of, they're made in April, and the closing date's towards the end of the year. January, they open it up. So anyone can nominate her. I hope she is nominated. I hope she is successful. And I think there's no more. Catherine Corliss won it last year from Tuam, the historian. There could be no more appropriate modern Irish woman than Vicky Phelan.
Welcome back to The Hard Shoulder. We are having an incredible panel discussion in relation to rape survivors. And we've heard the individual stories of Amy Barrett, Melissa O'Keefe, Niamh Donnell and Fiona Doyle. We want to talk now about shared experiences in terms of how the system works and in terms of the supports available. You've all spoken different anecdotes about you're dealing with individual police officers and so on. Do you think you got justice? And if not, how could the system be changed to help you, Amy?
Like, for us, it was never about the sentence anyway. I mean, if Dad got 20, 30, 40 years, would it be any different? You know, I think what upsets me is that you look at different cases and you see it depends on the judge, you know, and I think that's wrong. I mean, it should be consistent. You know, if somebody is accused of rape and they're convicted of rape, then there should be like a standard of a certain amount of time.
Yeah, we need mandatory sentencing brought in. That's a big thing. Well, it's like the day my father got sentenced, a guy got 7 years for not paying tax on garlic. And it was just, it was shocking, the comparison. And even some of our cases is shocking, the comparison of the sentences that they received and are mostly not receiving. And I think if mandatory sentencing was brought in, there'd be guidelines set. And it'd be, I hope, a huge deterrent as well. You know. So.
But Amy said that if her dad got 40 years, it wouldn't have made any difference. You don't feel that way, Fiona? Length of the sentence.
The length of the sentence was important to me because it gave me value on the damage that was done to me. And I felt that it was important because, you know, if somebody was going to get released, as my father did, he walked out that day. What message does that send? What deterrent is that? It's nothing. And after what I'd gone through, I mean, they say ignorance is bliss, but I went into all this ignorant, not knowing the the conditions, not knowing what I was going to be put through, not knowing, I didn't know anything about the support services. I knew nothing. I must have been so stupid, really, when I look back. And it was just, it was horrendous. But yet I'm concerned about saying that in the next breath, because I don't want to put victims off coming forward. Because life after standing up and defending yourself and protecting yourself is much better than it was beforehand.
Niamh, do you feel you got justice from the system?
I don't know in this situation what the definition of justice is.
Just in your eyes, in your eyes.
But that's exactly my point. I don't even know how to define justice when something like this is taken away from you. And not like when we describe it that way, it's almost as if it's just momentary or it happens at one period of your life. But what we all know about trauma is that it lives with you. And so how do you have a sense of anything being reclaimed when you've got a consistent sense of loss and burden and weight? To come back to your question, I don't really think that I did, because I feel that Magnus had his back clapped the whole way along throughout the whole process, that he was so great for agreeing to come along. He was so great that he pled guilty. You know, he'd moved on. He had a new partner. She had children. And I was to be somehow grateful for that. And again, I suppose it's the sentence thing. It does and it doesn't matter. It does matter. You're right, Fiona, because suddenly there is a value or a worth placed on it.
Yeah.
And for me, the 7-year suspended sentence was like they theoretically got it, but it didn't actually amount to anything.
You see, having been a minister myself, I can speak to this with some authority. There were times when I called in the Secretary of the Department and I said, in relation to BSE or in relation to delivery scheme, I don't care, Permanent Secretary Sir Humphrey, how you do this. I just want it effing done. And are you, and it, like, this is the first big job you've got, I'm sure, because I'm hearing this from Fine Gael people, that you are a prisoner of yourself. You're not actually breaking hurling sticks over their head.
Ivan, I have to care how this is done. I can't just say...
I didn't say you didn't care.
I have to say, but I can't say that officials get houses built no matter how they're built or where they're built. I have to make sure that as we rebuild every single part of our housing sector, we do not repeat the mistakes of the past.
But we use all builds, and some of our sites are traditional build. So it's a combination of everything, because we do recognise...
I thought there was no one actually working here, because there's no cement mixers, there's no one doing any... I'm the hardest working here. Well, at least someone has turned up now. A few blocks have been delivered by a guy with a... ABM is the contractor here doing the works. One of the things that, as you know, I have a big beef, which it is, that nobody can get planning permission except for blocks of apartments in the private sector if you're within a mile of a railway line, Mallow and different places across Wexford and so on. Why are we building on council land where there's an intensive need for density? Why is it all 2 and 3 bedroom houses that you're so against? Why aren't we building apartments?
Well, again, to be clear, Ivan, every site is different and every application is different, be it private or social housing. And local authorities like Dublin City Council here and the other Dublin ones as well are bringing forward projects that involve apartments and involve high density as well, and we're trying to encourage that.
But one of the main relationships then is a brother and sister, and one of the other ones is an aunt and a nephew.
Sorry, what about them?
Yeah, there's Cersei and Jamie are brother and sister, and they have 3 children. She's married to Robert Baratheon.
A brother and a sister?
Yes.
It's incest?
Yes.
How right?
It's okay. It's grand. You get used to it. But
do they look like humans?
They're humans.
Are they like gorillas?
Yeah, it's all humans. It's basically, they're all people. It's just ordinary.
But surely you take sides. There's people that you want.
Oh yeah, everyone roots for their favourite character and who they want to end up on the throne. But the point of the 8th season is there probably might not be any throne to be there, because it's all a lot.
And are the White Walkers people as well?
They're zombies. They're the dead. So there's a White Walker and the Whites.
Right. So they're not human.
Don't even think about that. I swear, if you watch this show,
well, no,
you will love
Stephanie
it.
Said that she loves it. Stephanie runs it, and she said there was 3 monsters, but one of the monsters died. Explain to me about the monsters.
The dragons.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's 3 dragons that are owned by Daenerys Targaryen, who's one of the claimants to the throne. And her father was the rightful heir, but he was the Mad King and was killed by someone else in the series, Jaime Lannister. So she says she has the claim to the throne, and she keeps flying, coming down with her dragons. dragons towards King's Landing to take her throne back. And I mean, the dragons are brilliant. Like, you will enjoy the dragons when they turn up. They're brilliant, brilliant characters.
They're a laugh, are they?
Your face, your eyebrows are nearly up to the top of your head.
Well, no. In relation to my views on the nurses' strike, a sample of my adoring public. Adrian Jackson says, I am sick of listening to Ivan Yates and his pontificating. Nurses do fantastic work under horrendous conditions. Mary Rogan says, pretentious and pompous. Ignore Ivan Yates. Seamus Whelan says, and don't forget his shift is only 2.5 hours long. 3, actually, and I do another at night. Anyway, but that's okay, Seamus. Dee says, empty vessels make the most noise, like Ivan Yates. Trina Murphy says, hashtag turn the dial, in frustration, obviously. David Witt says, just remember Ivan Yates is one of them pretending to be one of us. David had never pretended that. David, Deirdre Feheli says, professionals sitting behind a desk with no lived experience and no idea what's going on. So, my take on the nurses, is it that I go up to sleeping dogs and kick them in the you-know-whats? No. No. There are two perspectives. I spent over 20 years in politics where I had to say the right thing because I was looking for votes. I am now in the very privileged position I can say what maybe politicians are afraid to say because I'm not looking for votes. And the second point I would make is, in relation to any matter, whether it's money on the arts, whether it's money on big white elephant projects, whether it's public sector pay, I actually believe in the national conversation that by and large, most of the public sector workers' unions, by and large, most of the vested interests actually get their stake in pretty well, and they're well able to defend their corner. The people I'm concerned most about in this country are the 1.7 million people, private sector workers, who maybe aren't in any union, who end up paying for everything. Your ordinary Joe Soap taxpayer. And I just ask, in the overall, who actually represents them? Because the simple thing is to say, we love Florence Nightingale, we love nurses. There is very few people who will actually say no.
I know from you as a friend that, yeah, that the particular wrench of you being the primary carer to moving to a nursing home, yes, was very difficult for you. I'm talking about your own health, yes, here, Nora, yeah, and yes, your own emotional well-being.
Yeah.
Tell me, if someone is faced with that crisis in their life, yeah, for a long and happy companionship and marriage and loving situation, where you're actually, it's therapeutic for you to mind the person,
yes,
and that's taken away from you.
Yeah.
How do you cope with that?
Well, that's probably one of the most difficult decisions, because you have to mind yourself as a carer. And it's one of the things the Dementia Understand Together campaign is also stressing, that it's not just the person living with dementia, it's also the people who are caring for them. Because if you get sick, or if you... I had a fall last year, which was an eye-opener to me.
I've told you to cut down on the gym. But anyway,
ironically, it was in a bus and we were on our way to sing. And I had a bad fall and ended up just for one day in an emergency department. And luckily, it's the one time, Ivan, when I make a joke out of it, I was glad I was reasonably well covered, because I didn't break my hip, and I should have with the fall I had. Mm. Whereas if I'd been very, very thin, which I'm not, I might have broken my hip. But it made me kind of stop and think about, if that happened to me and if I had broken my hip, where would I be going with Brian? And in a way, it was the start of the last 3 or 4 months of my caring facility for Brian.
But if someone is faced with that, they should brace themselves for the emotional pain of it.
Yeah, and they should. I mean, I couldn't say to people, when Brian went in at the end of September last year, and if somebody asked me, I just had to walk away because I just kept breaking down.
13-hour flight, Bangkok to Amsterdam. Turbulence from about 20 minutes in constantly.
Yes.
Right?
Jackhammer in your tummy.
All I will say to you is, Ivan, now know why the sink is so near the bowl.
Oh.
It was just, it was, I spent 7.5 hours on a 13-hour flight.
Enjoying your Friday roast.
Yeah. Oh, God.
My apologies.
I was horrified at myself.
And did you go on for the
7.5 hours I spent in the cubicle
toilet
at various times.
But
not in a single sitting, it must be said. Yeah. But I was constantly trying to kind of get. And then, of course, we get to Amsterdam Airport, and I'm in need of new underwear at this point in proceedings, right? And the only thing available in Schiphol, and I know, Ivan, you would be going the glamorous end of that particular market, but I'm a straightforward Dunser, Marks and Spencer's guy, right? Into Schiphol
Sounds like
Airport.
A Pampers case to me, but go on.
And all I could get was a three-pack of particularly luridly tight Bjorn Borg jockey pants.
That might have been just as well, really.
Well, three layers were you.
That's lovely. That's really killed it all now. Okay.
Can I say, because I'm too scared to fly and I have so many horrendous personal experiences with flying, I don't fly. But I can tell you something, and this is in favour of Irish Rail. I travelled all across America on Amtrak. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about going from New York right over to Seattle. Yeah. 26 hours. It is unbelievable. One particular east to west journey that I went on insofar as with Deirdre. I am 6 foot two. The cabin, the bunk beds were about 4 foot.
Oh, God.
And basically the whole thing was... That we were 6 hours delayed because every time there was a freight train coming in the other direction, we actually had to pull into a siding because the rail track is owned by the freight company.
That's where they make
their
money.
It is unbelievable. Yeah. Yeah. The food was appalling. And the worst bit of all was we were sitting in Chicago, I think it was, to go on, and we'd had a few horrendous journeys. So we said we would get industrial quantities of wine to bring with us to inoculate us through the journey. And what happened was that we were sitting in the passenger thing waiting, and we thought we had hours. There were 16 weeks. And then the final call for our particular train, we're going to miss our bloody train. We spent about €350 and so on. So we ran down. And what happened? But the paper thing, the smash of all the bottles on the floor in Chicago thing. And I was crying about my wine. She was crying about it. We just have to keep going and leave the... We left a wine lake smashed on the floor.
Trail of destruction.
And they didn't sell wine on the bloody Amtrak train.
You do not have to have what is now being held out as the big ogre. You do not have to have a hard border of the sort that you had during the Troubles. It is not necessary.
But you have to have a border. You have to have a border. But look, the other question I want to ask, John Major has made the point that the reason he's opposed to Brexit principally is because it weakens the union of the UK. In other words, because Scotland and a majority in Northern Ireland and Scotland want to go in a different direction, it inevitably creates a gap between that and England. And it'll actually result in the long-term breakup of the UK. Surely that's a bad thing.
Yeah, it would be if it happened, but I don't see it happening. I mean, this is another spectre that is held out by Remainers who lost the referendum. This is another spectre held out by them that somehow this must, to use your word, inevitably lead to the breakup of the UK. It doesn't have to lead to the breakup of the UK at all. Never mind inevitably.
I was speaking finally to someone and I said you were coming on the programme. They said, hold on a minute, Ivan, get a grip. She did Strictly Come Dancing. She's done Celebrity Big Brother. Why doesn't she go into the jungle? She's just attention-seeking, that Anne Widdecombe one. What do you say to that?
Well, what I say to that is quite simple, that when I was doing Strictly and Big Brother, I thought I had left behind politics. If you think that I wanted to come back to frontline politics,
you're just attention-seeking.
Sorry?
You're just attention-seeking.
Well, you know, I mean, that is just utter rubbish. I happen to be a great believer in democracy and in Leave. And if you don't want to accept that, if you just want to throw insulting terms at me, go ahead.
Is there a moment in the privacy of your own bed, on your own at night, where you look at where we ended up right now and where we may end up, and when you look at the level of division within British society, leave aside the politicians, you know, and the extent of divisiveness of this, do you have any regrets about foisting this on the British society?
I believe in liberty, I believe in freedom, I believe in democracy, and I believe in the nation state. What price? Freedom. And the reason we've got this division in our country is because large sections of our establishment, backed up by their friends in multinational businesses, refused to accept a genuine democratic vote. No, I want us to be a free, independent country, just as your forefathers wanted Ireland to be a free, independent country. It's the natural way for things to operate across the world. And I promise you this, if we have this conversation in 5 or 10 years' time, the European Union, as it is, I don't believe will even exist.